Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and today our front page articles include NAH outlines needs ahead of forums, probable cause upheld in Flagstaff sting case, and Uno tournament to benefit Sharon Manor. And we'll begin at the top of the page with the article titled NAH Outlines Needs Ahead of Forums. And this is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun Staff reporter. Leaders at Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, are continuing to make the case for a new hospital in Flagstaff ahead of a pair of forums on reuse of the current location of Flagstaff Medical Center, FMC, should the hospital move. NAH has been planning to build a new campus for FMC since 2021, though its plans have changed in response to a 2023 referendum. The healthcare system, which operates FMC and Verde Valley Medical Center among its locations, has not yet announced a site for its current construction plans. It has said it is considering five options, with COO Bo Cofield saying the goal is to make a recommendation to the board within the next 6 months. The reason for having the reuse forums ahead of that decision, according to NAH, is to address community concerns that arose during the first attempt at moving FMC. Those plans were put on hold after the referendum, and NAH leaders have said they have made changes to their approach to the project in response. Next week's forums are intended to gather input from the community on how it would like to see the space used if the hospital moves. Whether the hospital should move and other topics related to the project's potential location will not be part of the sessions, said Cofield and Chief Medical Officer Rachel Levitan, though they also said that decision had not yet been made. We don't want people to assume, just because we're asking this question, that we've made a decision one way or the other, Cofield said. One of the things we heard from the community was that if we were to propose to move, they'd like to know what we're going to do with the existing space. And we'd like to know what that is so we can continue to work on those plans if that's the recommendation. NAH's board will make a decision on the site selection following a recommendation from system leadership. Cofield said that decision should the board choose a site for FMC's future campus would be followed by some kind of event for community discussion or feedback. NAH has already hosted two similar reuse forums for hospital employees, which they said had included a range of suggestions and discussion of the area's unmet healthcare needs. Levitan added that she'd heard opposite responses to some of the suggestions, with people speaking both for and against the idea of housing on the site as an example. Both Cofield and Levitan said NAH will be taking note of the feedback received in these forums and will be using it as a part of the decision-making process. They said the healthcare system's focus has been asking about community needs in the years since the referendum. People are asking a lot lately, what is the plan? And what I've been trying to get people to understand is the plan is that we're listening and figuring it out, Levitan said. Site considerations. The question of rebuilding FMC on its current location was recently raised by Austin Aslan, a member of Flagstaff City Council, who called for NAH to work with him and the community to find a way to do so. Cofield said an analysis of what it would take to rebuild on site is currently underway. NAH undertook a similar analysis ahead of the initial announcement of its plans to move. And so far, he said, the findings have been similar. He also said the option of rebuilding on the current location had not yet been ruled out. The answer is still largely the same, which that it is doable. It's very expensive, Cofield said. We'll have to cut services for a period of time or cease performing certain services for a period of time, and you won't be able to accomplish everything that you need on a time frame that the community needs. One example he gave of a potential difficulty connected to building in place is the effect on traffic, both during construction and after the hospital is completed. Where FMC is today, up on North Beaver Street, we already have congested traffic, he said. What is the traffic impact to having more hospital beds, which means more patients, which means more visitors, which means more supplies, etc., etc., not just during the construction project, but actually operating the facility? If you're bigger, more people will be using those streets. And are they big enough to accommodate that? As far as Aslan's comments, Cofield said he hadn't spoken with the councilman about them, so hasn't asked him specific questions about his ideas. He gave similar answers when asked whether he thought any of the items Aslan proposed would remove barriers to building in place, and if he thought Aslan had an accurate understanding of the needs associated with building a new hospital on the same site. We love the idea of his support for facilitating improved health care in northern Arizona, whether it's on the current site or a different one, Cofield said. I think some of those things where he's offering support are absolutely wonderful and helpful. But we also want to ask the community, does the community want us to build higher on our current location? We don't know the answer to the question, and I'm not sure he does either. If he does, we'd love to hear it and see the data and understand. Cofield continued, we look forward to continuing conversations with the council and with the city as we continue to move forward, but I don't know how possible that is. Regulations have to change. How long does it take for regulations to change? I don't think we know the answer to that question. Hospital needs. The reason NAH originally proposed to move the hospital to a new campus still exist, Cofield and Levitan said, and they've grown in the over 4 years since the plan was first announced. FMC is continuing to meet its patients' needs, they said, noting its A hospital safety grade from the LeapFrog group, which has received for 5 consecutive reports. These are released twice a year. Cofield attributed this to the quality of NIH employees and their medical decision-making. We have to stand on our heads and do cartwheels to make those kinds of outcomes, where it would be easier in a space where we had a little more elbow room. He and Levitan noted that a patient's experience of the hospital can also have an effect on outcomes. The emergency department is one place where patient experience is affected by the needs created by FMC's current space, they said. If you were to walk through our emergency room, it looks very similar to how it did 20 years ago, meaning we haven't had the space to upgrade it, to make sure it had individual rooms, and to insert some of the more modern, up-to-date things we would like to be able to do to best care for our patients, Levitan said. She outlined the typical experience of a patient coming to FMC's emergency department, ED, and that of one who has the ideal ED experience based on current standards of care. That ideal experience can sometimes happen at the current hospital, Cofield said. But the limitations of this space mean those days and times are fewer and farther between. In the ideal scenario, the patient comes to the emergency department and is quickly seen by all of the necessary healthcare workers in the department and then is admitted to the hospital. Then they receive treatment and are discharged. FMC now has longer wait times in the emergency room. It is backed up, according to Levitan, because other parts of the hospital are full, so the ED needs to hold patients longer than it would otherwise. This also means patients might be moved to various places within the department during their wait, including hallways, spaces separated by curtains, or windowless rooms. Once the decision has been made that the patient needs to be admitted, the hospitalist will come see them, but they may wait in our ED for sometimes up to a day, sitting in that area waiting for an inpatient bed, she said. They will still be getting treatment, and they will still be getting seen, but it is fragmented. They're farther away from the floor they should be on. Their care is getting interrupted for emergencies in the ER. They're farther away from the testing, so just everything takes a little bit longer before they finally go upstairs, or they may be discharged from that same space. A lack of space in the current hospital is contributing to the issue, Cofield said, noting that while state data places FMC as around 70% full, that includes specialized areas that can only admit certain types of patients. Adult general patient care, he said, is usually full. Last month, Cofield said FMC was unable to accept about 230 requests to transfer patients to its care. Planned additions. While the specifics of what will be included in the new hospital cannot be determined until after site selection, Cofield listed some items that are certain to be added to the new space in some form. This includes a larger ED with more private space and enhanced areas for triage and behavioral health, close to services such as radiology, needed in the department's work in order to move patients through more quickly. It also includes more inpatient beds in private rooms rather than double rooms. There would be no patients in hallways in the emergency department, he added. We have patients in chairs in hallways. We have curtains that are keeping rooms from thoroughfares, he said. It would be great to have all private rooms in an ED as well. Cofield said FMC's data indicates that on an average day, it could currently use 35 to 40 more acute care inpatient beds. He added that having a larger emergency department would increase that need. He said the hospital was conducting another analysis to see how many beds would be needed, and it could be 10% to 20% higher than the 350 included in the earlier version of the plans, as FMC currently has 270 beds. That might not translate directly to a number of beds, Cofield said, depending on the site selected. He said even if the number appears lower than that total, the increased efficiency created by the new building would also expand FMC's capacity to be able to meet the region's needs throughout the lifespan of the new building. A new campus would include additional space for technology. Cofield gave the example of the mobile MRI unit that FMC added to its services over the summer and is operating out of the hospital parking lot. Another example he gave is biplane angiography, a type of medical imaging that Flagstaff does not currently have the capacity to offer, leading to difficulties in the recruitment and retention of neurosurgeons in addition to the impact on patient care. The new hospital is being designed for the next 50 years, he and Levitan said, including space to add new technologies that become available in the future, as well as to address projected growth in the region's healthcare needs. The hospital's support spaces would also be upgraded. Cofield said the kitchen is nowhere near enough to support the current total of patients and employees, for example. The design for a new hospital would also add more separation between the common and patient areas for privacy. Operating rooms are another area that would expand in a new hospital. FMC prioritizes patients based on their needs, Cofield said, but he also said it doesn't currently have enough operating rooms or staff. There are times with multiple competing priorities for limited space, and we have to triage which patients go when, he said. Our staff can't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as individuals, and it's hard to recruit and retain with the space that we have because we don't have some of the modern equipment. We don't have all of the space that some other facilities do, and that requires us sometimes to lag behind operative cases. Not to the extent that it will harm anybody, but if you're a patient, the first place you want to go when you get to the hospital is home. If there's a delay in getting to the OR, that delays the amount of time we can get you home. More information about NAH's plans for FMC can be found at nahealth.com/aboutus/expansion. The community forums will be on October 29th and 30th in the McGee Auditorium on FMC campus. They will take place from noon to 1 p.m. October 29th and from 6 to 7 p.m. October 30th. And there's also this is the same note that tells you that there will be forums being held from 12 to 1 on October 29th and 6 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 30th. And that article was titled NAH Outlines Needs Ahead of Forums by Abigail Kessler, Sun Staff Reporter. Moving along to our next front page story, probable cause upheld in Flagstaff sting case by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff Reporter. Judge Stacy Krueger of the Coconino County Superior Court ruled on October 10th that there was sufficient probable cause for the criminal indictment against Max Berkman, one of the defendants from the multi-agency online sex sting operation revealed by the Flagstaff Police Department this spring. Berkman, 27, is accused of attempting to purchase sex from an undercover detective posing as a minor. Krueger previously granted a motion by Berkman's defense attorney, Ryan Stevens, seeking a redetermination of probable cause based on allegations that the original presentation of evidence to a grand jury was unfair. But after listening to testimony by Detective Bethany Hyde and cross-examination by Stevens, Krueger ultimately ruled there was adequate evidence for the case to proceed on the single felony charge. This is not a trial. This is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, Krueger noted. Berkman has pleaded not guilty to the charge. Of note, none of the other defendants from the sting operation have pleaded guilty to the specific charge of child sex trafficking, an offense which encompasses prostitution with a minor. Those who have accepted plea agreements so far have all pleaded to lesser amended charges. The preliminary hearing did not substantially alter this legal outlook for Berkman, but it did reveal a few additional details of the methods used by police in their sting operation. As the Arizona Daily Sun previously reported, Berkman began texting the undercover officer, now revealed to be Hyde, after responding to an ad on the website skipthegames.eu, which advertises itself as the premier place online for consenting adults to find each other and have fun with each other. Although the website's terms of service state it prohibits fake profiles, Hyde testified on October 3rd that the site's administrators allow law enforcement officers to create undercover accounts and even have a designated law enforcement liaison to facilitate the process. She stated that another law enforcement officer, whom she did not identify, provided her with the contact information of that liaison at the outset of the operation. The purpose of posting this profile kind of goes back to the purpose of the operation, which was to identify anyone seeking to purchase sex from a juvenile, Hyde said. The profile she created in October 24 had the headline petite doll looking to please, accompanied by multiple emojis, lips, water droplets, and praying hands. Hyde stated that, based upon her training and experience, the lips and water emojis are commonly used in the sex trade, but that she could not recall the specific reason for including the praying hands. The age listed on the profile was 19, and the accompanying images were age-regressed photos of Hyde herself, modified using a filter in the popular photo editing application FaceApp. Much of Hyde's testimony and Stevens' questioning focused on the wording of the text messages between Berkman and the detective. In their first messages, before Hyde claimed to be a minor, Berkman wrote that he was seeking HH in call. Hyde told the judge that HH means half hour, and that in call means the buyer will go to the seller. Can you identify any other express statement, communication, message, phone call, anything from Mr. Berkman that expressly indicates he wanted to have sex with you? Stevens asked during cross-examination. Hyde said she could not. Stevens emphasized that Berkman never responded to follow-up messages asking what he wanted to do. He argued that the evidence of the case did not support the conclusion that Berkman had reached an agreement or fee schedule for sexual activity. He also noted that when Hyde first claimed to be 15, Berkman responded, "Sounds like a scam. I'm out." Stevens asserted that Hyde's follow-up messages, including statements like, "I'm just trying to make money," constituted an inducement to re-engage. But Sasha Charles, the deputy Coconino County attorney serving as prosecutor on the case, said the context of the conversation was as important as the precise wording of the messages. Because the original advertisement was very sexually explicit, Charles argued, listing a number of different sexual acts that the individual was willing to provide, there could be no logical reason to believe Berkman had any other purpose for initiating or continuing the conversation. She emphasized that although Berkman initially said, "I'm out," in response to Hyde's claim to be underage, he continued to respond to messages. In subsequent messages, he wrote, "Prove you're real and I'm down," and "I'm clean," both of which he indicated, according to Charles, continued sexual intent. Kruger, explaining her decision to the parties, said, "I look at the totality of the circumstances in context. Berkman's statements," she said, "were more likely than not references to sexual activity and supported the accusation of attempting to engage in prostitution with a minor." Berkman was arrested in October 2024, but not formally indicted until May 2025. Following Kruger's decision, the next hearing in the case was scheduled for mid-November. Berkman and his attorney will have to consider whether to pursue a negotiated plea with the state or take the case to trial. And that article was called Probable Cause Upheld in Flagstaff Sting Case by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. And just a reminder that you are listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. And now our third front page story today is titled Uno Tournament to Benefit Sharon Manor. And this one is written by Calliope J. Ludeker, Sun Staff reporter. It's time for Uno enthusiasts to stack their cards for a cause. On the evening of October 28th, Housing Solutions of Northern Arizona's UNO tournament will take place at Lowell Observatory, with proceeds benefiting Sharon Manor, Flagstaff's transitional housing program for survivors of domestic violence. Folks have been supportive and like the idea of something new. We're seeing a lot of interest, Housing Solutions CEO Devana McLaughlin said. Housing Solutions staff first came up with the idea of an UNO tournament as a fun and accessible way to support Sharon Manor. A wide swath of the population has experience with the game, many with their own fond memories. It feels like it's a universally loved game, said McLaughlin. A beta test run by the program allowed the team to iron out potential issues, time limits, scoring, and of course the negotiation of house rules had to be addressed before the big night. It was a little bit spirited when we were playing, McLaughlin said. We're cautiously optimistic we have it right. The tournament will consist of 4 speed rounds of the card game. The winner will receive a cash prize, which can be split in the event of a tie. A silent auction will be held throughout the event while guests enjoy the provided hors d'oeuvres. Funds raised by the tournament will go toward programs at Sharon Manor. These include operating support, such as utilities, insurance, accounting, and maintenance. The event also benefits case management for those receiving assistance from the nonprofit. UNO is the fun piece, but really we hope folks will come to support Sharon Manor, McLaughlin said, noting that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Sharon Manor receives applicant referrals from local shelters, domestic violence service providers, and community partners. A candidate must match 3 criteria to be welcomed into the transitional housing program. They are low income, have a history of domestic violence, and are experiencing homelessness. Upon acceptance, the client receives a year-long affordable housing lease and access to case management services. A stable living situation allows Sharon Manor to assist with safety, health, justice, and economic security. Residents pay rent, but it's based on the household income and unit size, McLaughlin said. We have folks paying as little as $400 a month. Staff at Sharon Manor are trained to help clients access resources and achieve goals. residents may be educated on safety planning and high-risk behaviors, particularly when it comes to divulging information online. The team can also be called on to help clients understand their legal rights and the complexities of the court system. Additionally, clients are connected to resources for physical health, mental health, employment, education, and long-term affordable housing. Some of the income earned from the rentals is funneled back into the program. Foundation grants, individual donors, and federal pass-through dollars from the Arizona Department of Economic Security make up much of what sustains Sharon Manor. At the time of writing, the government shutdown has not impacted the organization's federal funding, but the ongoing stability cannot be guaranteed. We rely on support from all sorts of funders, McLaughlin said. In addition to UNO, Housing Solutions plays host to an annual breakfast in May. The hour-long event educates the community on their programs, including talks from clients detailing how the support impacts them personally. Like the breakfast gathering, McLaughlin envisions the UNO tournament carrying on for years. We'll see how it goes, but fingers crossed, if the community embraces their love of UNO like we have, we'd love to be able to host this year after year, she said. Tickets for the UNO tournament are available online at click.housingnaz.org/UNO. Housing Solutions of Northern Arizona accepts donations at housingnaz.org/donate. When we were kids, there was an epic UNO game lasting into the wee hours of the night, and our friends wouldn't let us quit, McLaughlin said. One of the nice things about this, it's a timed tournament. You don't have to worry about signing up for a never-ending UNO game. And that article's title was UNO Tournament to Benefit Sharon Manor, and it was written by Calliope J. Ludeker, Sun staff reporter. So next we're moving along to the local and Arizona page. And the main story is called Hope, Fear, and Dancing Dinosaurs at No Kings Protest. And this is written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. For the second time this year, thousands of protesters gathered in front of Flagstaff's City Hall under the unifying slogan of No Kings, showing their opposition to President Donald Trump. Like the first No Kings protest in June, the event on Saturday, October 18th, blended serious concerns with an often upbeat atmosphere. Protesters lined up along Route 66, chanted refrains like, "No Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA," while behind them, a person in an inflatable dinosaur costume danced to the beat of a drum circle. Among the numerous signs and flags carried by the protesters, one stood out. A handwritten message that said, "I protested Nixon in 74, time to hit the streets again." Bud, the holder of that sign, said Saturday's turnout was more demographically diverse than the anti-Richard Nixon demonstration at the Phoenix Memorial Coliseum 51 years ago. "I mean, we're seeing everything here from young kids to old people like myself," Bud said. Things are very, very scary right now, and it's important for everybody to get involved, just like you see out here. Protesters cited a range of causes as their motivation, many noting that it was difficult to pick out a single reason. But among the more common ones were the actions of Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, agents in highly publicized raids across the U.S., and Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to major cities over the objections of state and municipal leaders. There were notably fewer mentions of Elon Musk this time around. What motivated me was just seeing all of the deportations of people who didn't commit crimes, and people who are really just trying to work and survive here, a protester named Ashlyn said. They're not doing anything wrong. They help our country. They're just people. They're not monsters, like I feel like Trump wants us to believe. As Trump has directed ICE to detain and deport more people, the percentage of ICE detainees without a criminal record has surged. Per the most recent available data, ICE is holding approximately 59,700 individuals, 71% of whom have no prior criminal convictions. A former Flagstaff resident died while detained by ICE in August. I'd say the top of the list is the abuse by the Department of Homeland Security, said Allen, a protester who drove down from Page to participate and wore an Abolish ICE sticker, and that's absolutely inexcusable. Ashlyn said she had family members in the military and that it was sickening to see Trump activate the National Guard against the people's interest. Trump has ordered National Guard deployments in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, Portland, Oregon, and Memphis, Tennessee. States have challenged the constitutionality of those deployments in federal court, leading to a slew of sometimes contradictory rulings and appeals. Members of the military took an oath to protect the country and the Constitution, and right now Trump is treating that as if they took an oath to him and what he wants to do and his tyrannical purposes, Ashlyn said. A demonstrator named Chris, who carried a sign that read, "Christian Veterans Against Trump," was similarly critical of the deployments. He had previously served in the Air Force, he said. "Our oath to the Constitution is pretty clear," Chris said. "The idea that we're going to do things outside constitutional bounds, that we're going to act outside the rule of law, is ridiculous, and should be ridiculous to everyone who takes that oath." Asked about the controversial proclamations made by Trump's Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, Chris said he wasn't familiar with all of Hegseth's plans, but added, "We're seeing a lot of senior leadership want to step down and vote with their feet. They're certainly part of a lot of discussions that the rest of us aren't privy to, so that should be an indicator." Some attendees said the gathering gave them a degree of encouragement, even if it didn't have immediate material effects. "I think that a lot of it is community building, seeing that you're not the only one thinking about these things," a protester named Joe said. "Whether or not it leads to tangible change in a community like Flagstaff, I'm not sure, but it feels good to speak out." A woman named Chris, who had not attended any previous protests, said, "This is giving me hope." Others, though, expressed fear about what the future might bring and a desire for more action by Congress to constrain Trump's aggressive use of executive authority. Unfortunately, these protests are amazing, but we do need to be backed by our representatives, a protester named Ruby said. That would be my hope. Bud, the one-time anti-Nixon protester, said, "You know, select your local representatives very, very carefully. Because it was the House and the Senate that was the final undoing for Nixon, and now we don't have that. So in 2026, select very carefully." A woman named Louise, who said her concerns included environmental protections for public lands and federal funding for health care in rural areas, also mentioned the 2026 midterm elections. "We're stuck with Trump for 4 years, but we're not stuck with all the congressmen and senators that support him," she said. "My biggest fear is he will decide we won't have an election because he'll fabricate something that indicates there's too much violence for us to have an election." Leslie, standing beside Louise, echoed that worry. "Short term, my greatest hope is that we have fair elections going forward." Louise said she was disappointed by the current Congress. "They are in lockstep, the Republicans, with Trump. Have a mind of your own," she said. "Do what's right for your constituents." And Leslie added, "Follow the law. That's what I would like to see. I don't think we're seeing a lot of that." Although signs around the event cautioned demonstrators not to engage with hecklers or counter-protesters, there was no sign of any such opposition. About a half dozen of Flagstaff Police Department officers watched over the scene. Volunteer medics roamed the crowd with water and electrolytes, and one person was handing out oranges and cookies from a stroller. Near the City Hall building, organizations including the Flagstaff Democratic Socialists of America, the Industrial Workers of the World, Flagstaff Mutual Aid, and Arizona List were tabling, offering free snacks, sunscreen, and pamphlets. Current Flagstaff City Council members Austin Aslan and Kara House were also present, collecting signatures for their 2026 re-election campaigns. Inflatable costumes, inspired by protests against ICE in Portland, where federal agents have repeatedly faced off with residents dressed as oversized frogs, featured prominently on the day. In addition to multiple dinosaurs, an inflatable chicken, lobster, axolotl, hippo, panda, and Santa Claus wandered through the crowd. And along with honks of solidarity from many passing cars, two passing freight trains sounded long blasts on their horns that drew cheers from the protesters. Still, beneath the exuberance, attendees expressed deeply felt anxiety about the direction of the country. A protester named Caitlin said the Trump administration was slowly chipping away and creating authoritarianism. "Our democracy is really kind of quickly eroding," she said. And the title of that article was "Hope, Fear, and Dancing Dinosaurs at the No Kings Protest" by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. Now we're moving on to the next page to read some news briefs. Local news briefs. The first one is titled "Kaibab National Forest Planning Prescribed Burns Near Tucson and Williams," and this is written by Daily Sun staff. The Kaibab National Forest is planning prescribed fire operations on the Tucson Ranger District beginning Friday, pending all required approvals. According to the release from the Forest Service, the work is estimated to continue through the weekend, and operations on the Williams Ranger District may begin next week as weather conditions allow. The planned prescribed fire areas include Blue Stem Project, a total of 7,030 acres of broadcast burning are planned to begin October 24th through the weekend on the Tucson Ranger District. Smoke will be highly noticeable from the Tucson area, particularly portions of State Route 64. Smoke is expected to lift during the day and travel northeast away from developed areas adjacent to these burns. However, cooler overnight temperatures may cause smoke to settle into low-lying areas surrounding the burn location. Pine Flat Project. A total of 4,302 acres of broadcast burning may potentially begin on October 27th on the Williams Ranger District. Smoke will be highly noticeable from the Williams area, Flagstaff, Verde Valley communities, Prescott communities, Chino Valley, Paulden, Ash Fork, Parks, Belmont, Interstate 40, and portions of State Route 73. Smoke is expected to lift during the day and travel northeast away from developed areas adjacent to these burns. However, cooler overnight temperatures may cause smoke to settle into low-lying areas surrounding the burn location. Area residents and visitors can expect to see and hear helicopters in the areas, as aerial ignitions will occur on portions of the burn. Aerial drone systems should not be used near the active project area, as they could interfere with aircraft operations. The next news brief is titled Grand Canyon Eases Water Fire Restrictions After Successful Repairs. And this is also written by the Daily Sun staff. Grand Canyon National Park reduced water conservation measures and fire restrictions at the South Rim on Friday, October 17th. Following successful repairs to water pumping and storage systems. With the switch from Stage 3 to Stage 2 water conservation members, the Camper Services Building at Mather Campground is once again open for showers and laundry. Ongoing conservation efforts include the use of reclaimed water for landscaping maintenance, and encouraging all visitors to take shorter showers, reduce toilet flushing, and turn off faucets while brushing teeth or shaving. The park remains in stage one fire restrictions, down from the stricter stage two restrictions. Under stage one restrictions, campfires are allowed within designated fire rings inside maintained campgrounds. Gas stoves with a fuel shutoff valve are allowed in all areas, including backcountry camping areas below the rim, so long as they are used in a location cleared of flammable materials. Campfires are never allowed below the canyon's rim. The park has remained open, albeit with reduced visitor services, since the federal government shutdown began on October 1st. Limited areas of the North Rim are open following the summer's Dragon Bravo fire. For the most current information about the conditions, closures, and access, visitors should check nps.gov/grca. And another news brief is called Coconino County Auctioning Surplus Public Works Property Through November 1st by Daily Sun staff. Shopping for a used road grader, tire balancing machine, or former sheriff's patrol vehicle? The Coconino County Public Works Department's surplus property online auction is live until Saturday, November 1st. Photos and descriptions of all available items are available at govdeals.com. The auction is online only, and in-person viewing of items at the public works yard is not allowed. The fall auction includes used trucks, cars, heavy equipment, and other surplus property that has met replacement guidelines. A full list of items can be found by searching for Coconino County at govdeals.com. Buyers are responsible for all aspects of pickup or removal, which will be by appointment only following the auction closure. Items are sold as is, where is, with no guarantee or warranty. And that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day.